Told herself that things would go back to normal once they adjusted to being a two-child family. Ever since Sarah arrived, they felt outnumbered. No, outnumbered was the wrong word. Outgunned. Sarah at 2 years, 1 month. The playground was a war zone, and Karina hated going. Toddler boys were little shits. The 4- and 5- and 6-year-old boys played war games over and over again. They used dull gray pirate swords or sharply pointed sticks. The more invested ones had bright plastic guns. Karina wondered about the parents of those boys. They cared enough to make sure the guns were brightly colored and couldn't be mistaken for real ones, but didn't care enough not to give them guns in the first place. Had she hated going to the playground with Callie when she was younger? Karina didn't think so. Maybe it was because Callie always avoided the warring boys. She chose the slide, the swings, the sandbox. Karina was proud of her for avoiding them. Good instincts, my little girl, she thought. But Sarah was different. Sarah watched and watched and watched the warring boys. She devoured them, eyes bright, hungry. Karina was sure Sarah would hurdle herself into those boys if she could. If only Karina would let her go, she would join them, become their general.
Bang, bang, Mama, Sarah says after. Bang, bang.
Sarah at 2 years, 5 months. Where do those blue eyes come from? Karina thought. She thought they'd have changed to brown by now. Both Karina's and Patrick's eyes were brown. Callie had started off with blue eyes, but they were brown now, too. In family photographs, Sarah looked like a visiting relative. Distantly related. Sarah at 2 years, 10 months. Callie said it hurt to hold her sister's hand. Karina told her she didn't have to hold it if she didn't want to. Sarah at 3 years, 2 months. Karina and another mom were standing at the edge of the preschool yard, watching their kids play. It was one of those moments of peaceful anonymity before the children realized their parents were back again to pick them up after another ostensibly joy-filled day at school. This was a thing that Karina liked to do, watch her child without her knowing she was being watched. Other parents liked to do it too, she noted. What did they hope to learn? Maybe that their kid was generous, that she said please and thank you, that she shared and took turns, that their kid did these things even when not under parental supervision. Maybe it was simpler than that. Maybe in those anonymous minutes before they were once again known to their children, the parents hoped they could tell what kind of person their child would become. Good or evil. Karina needed this covert watching. She lingered longer on the periphery than the other parents. Just one more moment out of sight, she thought. One more moment and she'd gain some insight into the psyche of her strange, or was it unusual, or was it difficult, second child. Now, standing with this other mom, Karina tested the waters. Were other kids like Sarah?
Second children are so different from the first, aren't they? She finally said out loud.
Yes, the other mom nodded, hand punctuating the air. Yes, they really are. Karina felt a moment of hope. Maybe she wasn't all alone. Maybe all second children were... What word to use? What word? But no. She would ask this question again and again over the next few months to different moms. She asked at preschool drop-off in the mornings, the other mom rocking back and forth, second child perched on her hips. She asked on the playground, the other mom diligently pushing the second child in the baby swing, the one that looked more like a harness. The differences were always harmless, about eating or sleeping.
Well, little Maximilian was always such a good sleeper, but this little one, she never sleeps. Or, Sophia is a very picky eater, but Madeline eats absolutely everything.
The differences were superficial, nothing to worry about, not really. Not like with Callie and Sarah. Once, someone came close to expressing what Karina herself was feeling. This was one of the poorer moms, one who could no longer afford their preschool. The rates had gone up again. Compared to my first, my second kid has a nasty temperament, she'd said.
Had that mom used the word nasty? That might be Karina's word. Probably the other mom had said something more innocuous and forgiving, something more loving. Probably she'd laughed affectionately as she said it. No one ever said what Karina suspected. Not only was her second child different, she was somehow wrong. Sarah at 4 years. For her birthday, Sarah wanted guns and soldiers and swords. She preferred the ones that looked real. Patrick wanted to indulge her, but Karina did not. Instead, she bought her bright plush dolls with two big eyes. Sarah built forts with pillows, used her Barbie car as a tank, called in airstrikes with her walkie-talkie, sent those dolls to war. Sarah at 4 years, 2 months. Her eyes never did turn brown. She never had any baby fat. She was always all angles and sharp places. So many differences. Hard where Callie had been soft. Fair, pale hair, pale eyes, pale skin, where Callie had been darker, richer, warmer. Sarah was fearless, but not in a good way. There were things in this world to be afraid of, and Sarah was afraid of none of them. And then came the day that changed everything. The three of them, Karina, Callie, and Sarah, were walking home from the park. Winter was on the horizon. The days got dark earlier, and the mile walk home longer and lonelier than in the summer. Patrick was at work. He was always at work. To get to the park, they had to leave a very nice neighborhood and cross through a less nice one. Not that it was bad, but it had dead zones. Dead zones like the one they were approaching now. The street ended in an abandoned parking lot on one side and a narrow, dark alley on the other. A few blocks beyond this dead space, the neighborhood once again became safe, inviolable. But for now, there was the parking lot and the alley and two little girls who were too slow, and a man who Karina could swear she'd seen watching them at the park. Now he was half a block behind them, and there was something about him, and that something was not good. Karina picked Sarah up and told Callie to pedal faster on her bicycle. Callie frowned her little worry frown, and instead of pedaling, got off the bike. She held tight to Karina with one small hand and pulled the bike along with the other. "Get back on the bike, honey," Karina urged, trying not to look back at the man, but looking back all the same. He was closer. Callie refused, but not because she was being bad, but because she was worried. Her little Callie understood danger, but not what to do about it. And Sarah, well, who knew exactly what Sarah understood? Should they run? Was she just being paranoid? Karina looked back again, and the man met her eyes, and he was closer, and they both knew that he would catch her and her girls and do to them what he would. Karina adjusted Sarah's position on her hip so she only needed one hand to hold her. With her other hand, she grabbed Callie and pulled her away from the bike. They could always buy another one. "Run with Mommy," she said, and Callie obeyed. They ran. They just had to make it to the other side. Had it always been this dark on this street at this time of year? Sarah wiggled in her arms. "Put me down," she cried. "Put me down." Karina was the kind of mother who tried not to yell. She was careful to explain her reasoning when denying something or the other. She never told her girls that they were bad, just that they had bad behavior. She almost never yelled. But she wanted to yell now. She wanted to slap their faces so they understood that she was serious. What she wanted most of all was to put Sarah down and pick Callie up and run. Sarah would be fine. The thought flew away as quickly as it came, but the shame of it almost killed Karina as she ran. Sarah stilled in her arms as if she'd heard her mother's thought. "Put me down, Mama," Sarah demanded, and Karina did, but before she could capture her hand again, Sarah twisted away and ran in the wrong direction. Karina screamed, because now she could see that the man was definitely a bad man. Not just bad behavior, no. He himself, at his core, was a bad man. She screamed as Sarah ran toward him, and Callie screamed, and Karina could not think what to do.
"Bang, bang!"
Sarah said loudly as her little legs brought her closer to the man. He stopped moving.
Bang, bang,
she said again as she stopped a foot away from him. He pulled out a knife. Sarah lifted her small hands into the air and raised her little voice so that it strained around the edges. The knife was still in the man's hands, and Sarah was so close to him. Too close, and her skin was pink, pinker than it had ever been. And even her hair seemed less pale. And the man held the knife, and Karina screamed, and Callie screamed, and Sarah said, bang, bang, and the bad man plunged the knife right into his own heart. And then he twisted the blade. In the weeks after, they all went to counseling. The counselor said they would learn to accept, adjust, and recover as a family. Patrick nodded, conciliatory and vaguely guilty, through those sessions. Karina wanted nothing to do with acceptance. She wanted to forget. She wanted Callie to forget how the blood had soaked the man's blue shirt.
Blue and red make purple,
Sarah had said some time later. Karina wanted to forget about the small spot of blood that had landed on Sarah's nose. Sarah had smeared it across her face with her palm. She sucked at the palm before Karina could get out a wipe. She looked less pale than she usually did. Sarah at 4 years, 3 months.
Are you sure you're remembering correctly? The woman FBI agent asked in every interview in the weeks to follow. Your daughter said bang bang.
Yes.
And then he stabbed himself.
Yes.
And twisted the knife.
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes, yes, yes.
The agent told her that they were lucky. They'd been trying to catch that man for a very long time. He killed girls and their mothers in brutal ways. It was good he was dead. Karina agreed. She wondered if she'd imagined Sarah tasting the bad man's blood. Sarah at 4 years, 3 months. Sarah asked,
Do you have the light, Mama?
Karina said, I don't know what you're talking about. Sarah at 4 years, 6 months. Karina was shocked. All the parents were shocked when they learned that Mr. Jordan, everyone's favorite kindergarten teacher, had been fired.
He slapped a child?
This shrieked question was from one of the preschool moms. The parents had been summoned to an all-hands community circle meeting.
What kind of school are you running here?
Demanded one of the dads. He was the CEO of some company or another, and spoke as if life were a contentious board meeting with dissenting stockholders everywhere. Mr. Jordan had been Callie's favorite teacher when she was in kindergarten. He was everyone's favorite teacher. And now he was gone. Sarah had been in his class for only 2 months. Sarah at 4 years, 8 months. The parents were shocked anew. Another beloved teacher, another teacher of Sarah's, fired. CEO dad pulled his son from school. Sarah at 5 years, 2 months. Patrick had his first affair when Sarah was 1 year and 9 months. It ended when she was 2 and 7 months. Another one began at 3 years, 4 months and ended just 2 months later. This third one, though, begun at 3 years, 9 months, seemed like something real. When did things first start going so wrong between them, Karina wonders. Was it the exact moment that Sarah was born? They'd had a fight a few hours after her birth, right there in the hospital room. She couldn't remember what it was about. There was a time when Karina bragged about her and Patrick's relationship to anyone who'd listen. We never argue, she'd say. We're best friends. We communicate. We love each other, but we also like each other. Other couples were jealous of their relationship. She could see it in their eyes, and it made her feel satisfied and a little superior. Now she understood a little of what those lesser couples must have felt. She'd like to meet the old Karina and the old Patrick again. She'd tell them to be gentle with each other, even when they were sleep-deprived. She'd tell them to be careful with their words. Some things, once heard, can't be unheard. She'd tell them not to have a second child. Not under any circumstances. Sarah at 6 years, 3 months. Karina didn't love Sarah as she should, not as much as she loved Callie. She tried to, but she didn't. And Sarah knew it. Sarah at 7 years, 1 month. Patrick remarried. Since the day he walked out on Karina, he hadn't seen either of his daughters. He thought it for the best. He couldn't explain it, but thinking of them, thinking of Sarah, made him angry. Sarah at 7 years, 10 months. Sarah said,
"The light makes people angry."
Karina closed the door in her face. Sarah at 9 years, 3 months. Having a second child had been Karina's idea. She'd always pictured herself as a mother of two children, sisters. They would play princess dress-up and go away to summer camp and share secrets and have crushes on the same boy and cry together and be the maids of honor at each other's weddings and love each other, love each other, love each other. But Patrick thought one was enough.
"We're so happy now," he said.
Callie was 1 and a half at the time, and they'd finally hit their stride as parents. But Karina could not help what she was, what she wanted.
"Callie needs a playmate, a sister," she said to Patrick. "I don't want her all alone when we die," she said, upping the stakes.
Eventually, Patrick relented. For a long time, Karina hoped the sisters would grow close. But they didn't. Callie wilted in Sarah's presence. She made other girlfriends. She had playdates and sleepovers and dance parties and treated them like they were her sisters. Karina didn't blame her. Sarah at 14 years, 7 months. She made 3 friends at school, the first she'd ever had. Sure, they were the girls no one else wanted as friends, but it was something. Karina was grateful. Maybe Sarah would finally become normal. Sarah at 14 years, 9 months. Sarah was sick, and no one seemed to know how to fix her. Sarah at 14 years, 11 months. Karina watches Callie's body burn. She screams, and she screams. 3. Present day.
A life is a series of past moments, all of them leading you to the present one. The moment doesn't have to be an event. It can be a sudden insight that changes how you see yourself in the world. These moments serve to clarify you, to sharpen who you really are for yourself and for others. Here are mine. I am born. I try to cry, but find I can't. I do not look at all like the rest of my family. My mother doesn't like this. A white light lives under my skin. I ask my mother if she has it too. She doesn't answer. My mother does not love me, but she wants to. I want to be more like Callie. I want to make strangers glad. I want them to ask me, "What's your name, pretty girl? How old are you? Oh my gosh, where did you get those cute shoes?" But they don't ask me questions. Instead, they say, "You're so quiet." They say, "Smile. Be more like your older sister." The more perceptive ones say, "You like to watch the boys fight." I make the bad man kill himself. My mother is afraid of me. I want to be normal. I am the only one with the white light. It leaks out of me, and bad things happen. It's my fault Mr. Jordan slaps Sammy so hard that he gets all red and swollen. I make people angry and afraid. I don't know how to stop. It's my fault Mr. Kelly screams so loud and so long on the playground. His heart is crowded with anger and fear. I did that, too. I don't know how to stop. My father loves someone more than he loves my mother. My mother loves Callie more than she loves anyone. My father leaves us and does not come back. I dye my hair brown. I wear brown contacts. My mother still does not love me. She cannot. I deny what I am. For a while, I am successful. I am sick all spring. The doctors don't know what's wrong, but I do. I finally learned how to keep the light under my skin. I hold the light in. I make a friend. My hair thins, falls like straw around my feet.
I hold the light in. I make another friend. My lips crack to blue. I hold the light in. I'm too sick to attend school. My skin bleeds color. Callie gets strong as I get weak. Still, I hold the light in. It burns me from the inside. All spring, they, Callie and our mother, wait for me to die. The light won't let me die. I burn. I burn. I burn. Callie comes back from camp. It's the first summer she's ever been away from home, away from me. She comes into my room, and she looks better than I've ever seen her. Beautiful. Our mother says, the doctors haven't been able to fix her. Callie says, maybe it's better this way. Our mother nods. Callie comes close to my bedside. Ordinarily, she would never come this close, but I am helpless now with the light trapped under my skin. She says, I was happy this summer without you. She says it sharp and fierce, like a stabbing. I've never heard her sound so strong. I hold the light in for her. I want her to be happy. But then she puts her hands over my nose and my mouth. Our mother does nothing. I can't breathe, and I think, yes, let me die. Callie can finally have our mother back. My bones burn, but the light is stronger than me. It will not let me die. And then I finally understand what I am, and it's a relief. I give all the light to my sister. I let it pour from my skin to hers. I watch as she turns pale. Finally, she looks at me. I watch as she turns to ash. My mother is still screaming when I leave the house. I am on the highway now, and everything turns to ruin. I don't know how to stop. I no longer want to. We are born into our natures. It's not a thing we can help. I know that now, but didn't always. I am the curse of men. I am war. And this world is mine. Steph Sinclair and Kat Kennedy's villain challenge to Nicola Yoon. Gender-flipped God of War. The Bad Girl's Guide to Villainy by Steph Sinclair and Kat Kennedy. In this male-dominated world, everything is harder as a woman, especially when you're trying to crush the world under your fine pair of sky-high stilettos, combat boots. Sarah found them particularly useful in stomping out opposition, stomp, 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 or whatever type of footwear you find best for disenfranchising humanity. Struggling to claim dominion over the huddled masses is one thing, but struggling with body image, self-image, interpersonal relationships, and even where you fit in with the world is another. So whether you're the god of war like Sarah, who thrives on chaos, or a morally ambiguous deviant like us, our feel-good guide for villainesses is here to help. All references to villainesses are fictional and represent no likenesses to people, animals, aliens, supreme beings, ghosts, zombies, the reincarnated, overlords, underlords, etc., dead or alive. Dive in and be ready to answer the question, who's the baddest bitch of them all? The body that's going to conquer hearts and minds. What do you wear when you're on your way to inflict panic and fear in the hearts of civilians? A red satin bustier? Standard-issue military fatigues? Guess what? It's not important. Even if your heart of hearts leads you to wear rhinestone jeans or a fluffy pink unicorn onesie, that's okay. You be you. You can leave your enemies lying in a pool of their own blood no matter what you're wearing. Unless you're planning on wearing a cape. No capes. Oppress others, not yourself or your body. There is no perfect body or body type. You know what you should spend your time perfecting? Your war strategy. Your body is a wonderland of terror and fear-inducing propositions. Forget the strictures of the male gaze. Dress to impress or cause extreme distress. If other people's bodies are temples, yours is a war machine with built-in booby traps, baby. You know what's humble? Pie.
You are not a pie.
Internalizing other people's expectations leads us to feel like we should be humble, ladylike, and civil. Be the villain you want to be and repent to no one. Not your family, not the neighborhood watch, not the military trying to shut you down.
Can you be too bossy?
No, of course you can't, because you're the boss. You're a leader who demands the attention and respect of all who lay prone at your feet.
Are you asking too much? Are you giving enough to other people? What kind of guide do you think you're reading? You're a villain. Taking and expecting everything is villainy 101. Live it. Breathe it. Bask in the bloodlust haze of glory.
Should you be sweet and innocent?
Ha. If people are underestimating your feminine power, that's their mistake, and your opportunity to strike. Don't let it get to you. Their reaction may be initial mockery, because how dare a woman strike fear into the hearts and minds of men who laud themselves as gods? But the end result will always be the same. Them begging for mercy, and you giving exactly zero fucks. Yes, revenge is indeed sweet. And deadly.
Nobody puts villainess in a corner. Everyone internalizes the expectations that their family places upon them. Be good like your sister. Do your homework. Walk the dog. Smile and be nice. What is this smile? You only smile when your plans come to fruition. Listen, what we're respectfully advising is that you take those expectations and you shove them down the throats of every single Muppet who tried to make you be less of what you are. Parents, family, and friends tell you that you can be whatever you want to be, but what they really mean is whatever you want as long as it fits in their neat little box. And for a woman exercising her command, that box is restrictive as hell. Destroy that box and the horse it rode in on. Light it on fire for good measure. Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. Forget what the world and society and your family want you to be. You know why? Because you are going to shape and remold that as you exist in your perfect form upon the ruinous remains of the earth. I came in like a wrecking ball. Relationships are totally unnecessary. The only relationships you need are with your minions and your weapons of mass destruction. But if, like Sarah, you are forced to deal with family and friends, her solution to set them on fire may be the best one. Unless they're more useful as cannon fodder. You don't have room in your heart because you don't actually have a heart. What you have is a gaping black chasm in your chest and an insatiable thirst for domination. Tears and nightmares fuel your hate fire. You may be asking yourself, where do I fit in if I have no friends or families? On top of the world, laughing maniacally. Look, people have spent hundreds of years asking why women are out of the kitchen. Unless you're making a sandwich bomb, don't even dignify this with an answer. Not only are you capable of taking the world in your bloody fists, you deserve to, and everything that comes with it. You've earned this. Own it. Be it. Believe it. Then crush it in a fiery death along with everything else. So, whether your plan is to drill to the center of the earth and unleash hell, or blow up the moon, or just simply walk into the middle of a city and unleash your god of war powers, remember, villains are a dime a dozen. It takes true determination to outshine and outgun the rest. You can either choose to let the world dominate you, or you can dominate the world. And if it were up to us, when we're looking into the soul-dead, murderous eyes of our foe, we want a powerful, badass woman looking right back at us. Briefly, before she slits our throats.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Because You Love to Hate Me, 13 Tales of Villainy. Written by A. Marie. Performed by A. Marie, Julia Whelan, and Kevin T. Collins. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2017 by A. Marie, Me Marie Nicholson. Introduction copyright, 2017 by A. Marie, Me Marie Nicholson. The Blood of Imeriv. Copyright, 2017 by Renee Adia. The Evil Vaccine, Keep the Darkness at Bay. Copyright 2017 by Christine Riccio. Jack, copyright 2017 by Amory Mimory Nicholson. Giants and Tyrants, copyright 2017 by Tina Burke. Gwen and Art and Lance, copyright 2017 by Soman Chainani. The Bad Girl Hall of Fame, copyright 2017 by Samantha Lane. Shirley and Jim, copyright 2017 by Susan Denard. Dear Sasha, The 411 for Villains, copyright 2017 by Sasha Alsberg. The Blessing of Little Wants, copyright 2017 by Sarah Inney. Will the Real Villain Please Stand Up? Copyright 2017 by Sophia Lee. The Sea Witch, copyright 2017 by Rampion Books, Inc. Villain or Hero, You Decide. Copyright 2017 by Zoe Hurt. Beautiful Venom, copyright 2017 by Cindy Pon. Without the Evil in the World, How Do We See the Good? Copyright 2017 by Benjamin Alderson. Death Knell, copyright 2017 by Victoria Schwab. Dear Death, copyright 2017 by Jesse George. Marigold, copyright 2017 by Samantha Shannon. Evil Revealed, copyright 2017 by Reagan Peruse. You, It's All About You, copyright 2017 by Adam Silvera. Behind the Villain's Mask, copyright 2017 by Catriona Feeney. Julian Breaks Every Rule, copyright 2017 by Andrew Smith. Julian Powell, Teen Psycho Extraordinaire, copyright 2017 by Raylene LeMay. Indigo and Shade, copyright 2017 by April Genevieve Tukulki. Glamorized Recovery, Expectations Versus Reality, copyright 2017 by Whitney Atkinson. Sarah, copyright 2017 by Nicola Yoon. The Bad Girl's Guide to Villainy, copyright 2017 by Steph Sinclair and Kat Kennedy. Production copyright 2017 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.